we get smart.
OPEC production limits, helping to drive down the price of oil from $20.50 a barrel in the opening days of 1990 to a mere $13.60 a barrel by summer.
You have to understand the difference. We didn't come over on the Nina, the Pinta, and the whatchamacallit. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Landed right on top of us.
Where's the outcry? Why? You can get all the film and the footage of all the carnage in Los Angeles, but you can show me no footage of any damage in Iraq. And all you show me is some surgical strike. Now, 1 year later, it comes out that these so-called surgical strikes were mixed in.
August 2nd, 1990, Saddam Hussein's forces crashed through the defenses of oil-rich Kuwait. In fear of an Iraqi invasion into Saudi Arabia, the United States and her coalition allies poured into the Arabian Peninsula to form a deterrent that would be known as Desert Shield. The result was a series of diplomatic talks, negotiations, and counter-negotiations that rapidly declined into a no-hope situation. On August 17th, 1991, Desert Shield became Desert Storm. The conflict was witnessed by millions through the eye of CNN and the BBC, showing propaganda of the systematic eradication of Saddam's forces by a coalition far superior in technological, political, and economic power. However, what was little known was that from the outset the war was engineered, controlled, and manipulated by an elite group. A group which had created the illusion of a man with power, at the head of a million-strong army, on the verge of going nuclear. A man who had gained control over one-fifth of the world's oil overnight. However, in reality, he was merely a pawn, in amongst many pawns, just a puppet in a grand master plan, with the Gulf War as a well-orchestrated stepping stone. The orchestrators of the war were by no means strangers to controlling major world events. In fact, they have done so for centuries. From the shadows, they have engineered every major war, revolution, and recession. They control everything you read, everything you hear, and everything you see. They have managed to indoctrinate an entire populace to their way of thinking, and have infiltrated key positions in places of authority. And it is from the shadows that they have created a new political order, a new economic order, and more sinister, a new religious order. Their ultimate aim is total global domination, and they will stop at nothing to reach their goal. The goal that was outlined in a speech given by former President of the United States, George Bush.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order.
However, the origins of this global plan were not created in the offices of the White House. In reality, their roots lay in another war. This time, the year is 1095, and the place, Clermont, France. The 11th century Europe was ruled by the Church, which held a firm grip on the hearts and minds of the people. This power enabled Pope Urban II to wage war on the Muslim Caliphate and crusade in what he called a War of the Cross to recapture the land of Jerusalem. It had been under Muslim rule since the year 637, But in 1099, this rule was brought to a bloody and sudden end. In the name of the cross, women were raped and murdered. Children were put to the sword, and it is said that blood ran in the streets knee-high to the horses. Out of this land of bloodshed and terror, a group of men arose. Men that would stop at nothing to get what they wanted, no matter what the cost. 20 years after Jerusalem was taken, the Dome of the Rock was seized by a group of warrior monks calling themselves the Knights of the Temple of Solomon, or more simply, the Knights Templars. In Jerusalem, the Templars began to deviate further and further away from the practices of Christianity. They learnt the secret arts of the Kabbalah, an ancient form of Jewish magic, along with its dark rites and rituals. The Jews had learnt the arts from the pagans of ancient Egypt during the times of enslavement to the Pharaoh and developed them into Babylon at the time of Nebuchadnezzar. In 1307, King Philippe of France arrested them for charges of denial of Christ, homosexuality, and idol worship, as well as magic. In 1314, Pope Clement V declared all Templars as heretics to Christianity, ordering all their properties to be seized. Their leader, Jacques de Morlaix, was captured and burnt to the stake. The Templars were cornered, and just when it seemed they were finished forever, a glimmer of hope arose from a seemingly certain end. They were to find a safe haven as well as an ally. But not in France. In fact, in a country in a desperate struggle for independence against the English, the country of Scotland. For some, Scotland's hope of independence had died with the death of William Wallace. However, to the King of Scotland, Robert the Bruce, the arrival of the Templars gave him a new secret weapon. Their experience, gained over 200 years of fighting the mighty armies of Islam, had made them expert in combat and warfare, and more than a match for any army brought before them. In 1314, the Templars, allied with Robert the Bruce and his army, took to the fields of Bannockburn in the long-awaited showdown with the English. Robert the Bruce's foresight paid off. The 25,000-strong English army suffered a humiliating defeat at the hands of only 6,500 men. The dream of an independent Scotland had finally been achieved. The Templars had brought themselves back from the brink of destruction, and never again would they allow themselves to be destroyed. This time, they would control the country by controlling its kings. And in order to preserve their secret order, the Templars would have to die. Or more precisely, the name would have to die. The Templars who had escaped Europe were finally laid to rest in Roslyn Chapel, Scotland, which stands to this day as sign of their presence in Britain. Their descendants became the true power of Scotland. In 1603, the death of Queen Elizabeth I left England without an heir to the throne. By virtue of descent, King James V of Scotland became King of England. In doing so, Scotland and England joined to form a new kingdom, and the power that the Templars held over Scotland spread to give them a firm grip on the whole of Great Britain. For over 100 years, the Templars concealed their activities, fading into the background until they were little known and little remembered. However, they did not cease to keep a firm grip on Britain. All the time they were planning, regrouping, and infiltrating positions of power in all corners of the kingdom. In 1717, the Templars made their reappearance in Europe. They had grown in both number and strength, and were now ready to coin a new identity, free from their reputation of the past, and given credibility by none other than the monarchy and aristocracy of England. And the name they chose for themselves was a name that would be known by many, but understood by a few. This new name, the Freemasons. The new identity and the grandeur of its members afforded the Masons with respect and dignity. The first royal member of the Freemasons was Frederick, Prince of Wales. The latest members include Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, and consort to the current Queen of England, Elizabeth II, who herself is a grand patron to the Masons. However, behind closed doors, the Freemasons were free to indulge in the secret rites and rituals handed down to them by their ancestors, and these became the basis of their levels of membership, called degrees. The Freemasons were not content with power in Britain alone. Their ambitions were far greater. In the years to come, the world would witness Europe and America being plagued by wars and revolutions, each more devastating than the other. However, these would not be as commonly believed the spontaneous effects of a downtrodden people, but in fact schemes created by the exclusive few driven by hunger for absolute power. All this would take place from the very country from which they had fled centuries earlier, and would come to the base for their global domination. In 18th century France, the majority of the population was very poor, whilst the aristocracy and royalty lived a life of luxury and extravagance. There existed a wide gulf between the two classes. The Freemasons would use this to make the pledge for power, resulting in the biggest upheaval in French history. The Masons took advantage of the growing atmosphere of anger amongst the French and used it to achieve their own aims with a carefully planned propaganda war. They completely controlled the media system and used it to sway the tide of public opinion. The newspapers were geared into calling for the end of the monarchy and the establishment of a society based on liberty, equality, and fraternity. The Masons' vast amounts of wealth were used to influence the political landscape of France. Politicians funded by the Masons promoted the Masonic ideology. The secret lodges of the Masons were open to members of the French army. High-ranking officers and generals were indoctrinated to the Freemasons' way of thinking. With the people, the politicians, and the military of France under Masonic control, the Masons could finally strike. On the 14th of July, 1789, a group of people stormed the Bastille, a prison in Paris. This sign of resistance against the French authorities triggered off a massive response all over France. People in villages and towns expressed their hatred for the system, symbolized by the monarchy. But it was not until 1793 that the French anger would be cooled. On the 21st of January of the same year, King Louis XVI was beheaded in front of a crowd, heralding an end to the French monarchy and paving the way for another Masonic-controlled state in Europe. With the monarchy gone, it seemed as if nothing stood between the Masons and complete control of France. However, what took place would leave the Freemasons in a serious dilemma, and what was to come next was not exactly in accordance with the Masonic plan. A young soldier by the name of Napoleon Bonaparte was about to lead France into a bloody war with Europe, and instead of dancing to the Masonic tune, Napoleon declared himself the Emperor of France. Napoleon was forced to abdicate from his throne in 1814 and was exiled to the island of Corsica. However, in 1815, Napoleon arrived in Paris again, raising a new army ready for a fresh war in Europe. The Masons had a big problem on their hands. Britain and her Masonic allies could not afford to maintain a long-term war against Napoleon without risking bankruptcy. Help came from an unlikely source. Nathan Rothschild was the head of a leading banking family, but because of their status as Jews, they were forced to work from the shadows of others. Rothschild seized the opportunity to liberate his people and offered a loan, demanding in return recognition of the Jews as equals to their European counterparts and the right to openly do business. If the Masons refused, the money could always go to Napoleon. The Masons had no choice but to accept, and the loan transaction was completed. In 1815, British, Dutch, and Prussian soldiers landed in Waterloo, Belgium, where they met Napoleon's forces and defeated them. Napoleon was captured this time, never to return. France was finally under Masonic control. Although historians make little mention of the Masonic involvement in the Revolution, the Masons themselves have to reveal their shadowy movements during this important period in history. In 1904, Marquis de Rossambeau, a Freemason, said before a packed audience, "Freemasonry has worked in a hidden but constant manner to prepare the revolution. We are then in complete agreement that Freemasonry was the only author of the revolution, and the applause which I receive from the left, and to which I am little accustomed, proves, gentlemen, that you acknowledge with me that it was Masonry which made the French Revolution." When the so-called founding fathers of America landed on Plymouth Rock, not only did they bring with them disfranchised people, they also brought the Freemasonic elements of Europe. The injustices which the fathers of America were escaping from in Europe was also to be found in the new land, in the form of a tyrannical British regime. In order to gain complete dominance of the new state, the Masons used the same methods they had used to gain control of France. Although the British monarchy was run by the Masons, the American War of Independence was a necessary action, and the people involved in the war were expendable for the Masons to fulfill their dream. Emotions of the people were manipulated into anger, and just like France, anger turned into war. This time, however, previous mistakes would not be repeated. The near defeat the Masons faced against Napoleon and his army in Europe taught the Masons a lesson. Any forthcoming leaders of the resistance must follow the Masonic agenda. The best way to do this was to ensure the leader himself was a Mason, and the leader who took the war to the British was none other than George Washington. On the 4th of July, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was made. On the 17th of October, 1781, the British were finally defeated and surrendered the colonies to the Americans, and the world's first Masonic state was born, a nation that would represent Masonry in every way. A sign of the Masonic presence in America is plainly visible on the dollar bill, which carries a picture of George Washington, the first Freemasonic president in the world, and a picture of the Freemasonic symbol of the so-called all-seeing one eye. Historically, the control and manipulation of political opinion has been the Freemasons' main weapon in gaining control of countries and states. Once in control of the rulers and politicians of a country, laws and political structures could be changed in accordance with their agenda. However, since restricting the body does not necessarily mean restricting the mind, the Freemason recognizes that their plan for a global government hinges completely on subduing the masses to their agenda, and thus eliminating opposition to their cause. And the greatest threat to their plan, posing more danger than any army or law, is the threat of a free-thinking mind. In order to eliminate this threat and to achieve their objective, the Masons have set about the boldest plan ever devised: the complete control of every aspect of human life, your life. And the weapons they are using against you are in your very homes, entertaining you and your children, and gradually indoctrinating you without you even realizing. In today's society, people are spending more and more time engaged with modern media, television, cinema, computer games, the internet. Popular fiction and popular music are an integral part of our lives. Yet these provide a vast expanse on information which you are taking, either consciously or subconsciously, into your mind. Information on society ranging from ideals and morals and the difference between right and wrong to the way societies and economies should be structured is passed before you every single day. These media play a significant role in providing the basis for determining an individual's view of the world and everything that exists. Thus, any one group in complete control of this information placed on these media will in effect have the power to indoctrinate practically the entire populace of the world to their way of thinking. And it is this fact that the Freemasons are exploiting. The Masons are using the entertainment industry in particular to condition people to their way of thinking, either openly or subliminally. The methods they use vary, but the goal is the same: to impose their beliefs, their ideology, and their objectives on you in such a way that you begin to think of them as your own. Evidence of their presence within popular entertainment is widespread. Masonic involvement in the industry is not a new thing. Hailed as one of history's great composers, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, a Freemason himself, composed a symphony which was an open display of Freemasonry. The symphony is based on a story taken from ancient Egyptian mythology of Isis and Osiris. The pagan rites of ancient Egyptian mythology form, through the Kabbalah, one of the fundamental aspects of Freemasonry. It is from these same pagan origins of Egypt that the symbol of the one eye stems. Evidence of the Freemasonic presence is also commonly found in the popular music of more recent times. Michael Jackson, hailed today as the King of Pop, regarded as the greatest entertainer of all time, responsible for producing the best-selling album in the world, may not be known to be linked with the Freemasons. However, the cover of his Dangerous album has some interesting features. On it, the Freemasonic symbol of the one eye can be found, and also a picture of a watery lake behind which lay burning flames. It seems as though anyone entering into the water would really be entering into the fire. The cover also has on it a picture of a bald-headed man, well known to the occult as Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley himself was a Freemason who became a Satanist and wrote the book The New Law of Man, which stated in it that it would one day replace the Quran as the law of man. Links between Freemasonry and the occult do not end there. The products of the Masonically controlled music industry are riddled with subliminal satanic messages. Backtracking is the means of placing recorded messages into soundtracks in such a way that they only become intelligible when the track is replayed backwards. When it's played forwards, however, the listener would be totally unaware that a message is being played. Although the listener may be unaware, the subconscious mind can pick up and understand the messages, and in the long term, these can be stored in the subconscious mind and may actually affect a person's behavior or judgment. In many ways, backtracking is like a form of hypnotism or brainwashing and has the power to be very destructive. The first example of backtracking is from the famous female artist Madonna. It features on one of her most famous albums and is taken from the song Like a Prayer. Played forwards, the song sounds like this. However, as you will hear, it is not God that the prayer appears to be directed at, but Satan. When played backwards, the words, O hear us, Satan, are clearly audible. The Freemasonic One Eye has also been featured on the video for one of Madonna's songs, where Madonna actually appears with the one eye coming out from her forehead. Madonna also appears on a video where she is standing on some writing. Closer examination will reveal that this writing is actually Arabic, the language of the Quran. Another example of backtracking is taken from the group The Eagles, and the song is called Hotel California. And now the song backwards. The words, yeah, Satan, can be clearly heard when the song is played backwards. As well as containing this message, the song itself is a story in its own right. The California of the song is not a hotel, but is actually a street in America called California. It is on this very street that the headquarters of a church were founded, but it was not the type of church that one may think. Instead, it is a church that some have called the Church of Satan. It was headed and founded by Anthony Sanz de Levy, the author of the Satanic Bible. It appears that the teachings of this church may have become the integral belief of many famous personalities in the entertainment industry. From rock groups to more mainstream artists, some have gone as far as promoting the church and its beliefs. One alleged member of the church is the lead singer of the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger, who wrote the song Sympathy for the Devil. It seems that what originally started as a Christian organization later turned into a heretic religion, even for the Christians, and now has satanic elements mixed in. The entire entertainment world is rife with evidence of the Freemasons' presence. Openly or subliminally, their agenda and beliefs and ideals are propagated. This is especially evident within the film industry, on the big screen and the small screen, from big-budget Hollywood films to simple cartoons. The Masons have not left anything to chance in promoting their message of a global government. Matt Groening, the creator of one of the most popular cartoon series in television history, The Simpsons, is a self-confessed anarchist. Matt Groening himself has openly declared that he wanted to get his own political ideas across within his work. But he wanted to do this in such a way that people would find it easy to accept his ideas. And the means he chose to this was a clever little cartoon called The Simpsons. So what exactly is The Simpsons teaching us and our children? There are many lessons being programmed into us. These include disregard for authority, either parental and governmental, that bad manners and disobedience is the way to attain status amongst people, and that ignorance is trendy and cool, whereas knowledge is unfashionable. However, what is especially worrying is the Masonic undertones of one episode in particular. The episode in which the father figure of the family, Homer Simpson, becomes obsessed with a group called the Stonecutters, or should it be called the Freemasons? Upon joining the group, his fellow members find a birthmark on him, a mark that makes the rest of the group declare him to be the chosen one.
You are the chosen one whom the sacred parchment prophesied would lead us to glory.
But with his newfound honor and dignity, he, Homer Simpson, fools himself into thinking that he is God.
I always wondered if there was a God, and now I know there is, and it's me.
Some may dismiss it as nothing more than a children's cartoon, a bit of harmless fun. But the influence it has on audience makes it a very effective means of propaganda, indoctrinating a people without them even realizing. Its very creators admit that they are propagating their political ideas to the audience in a covert manner. Ideas spread through the domestic television can reach a far wider audience than movies and cinema. And it is through this media that a new concept is being introduced. The concept of one global leader. Famous for his novel, The Jungle Book, Rudyard Kipling, another Freemason, wrote a book called The Man Who Would One Day Be King. This was later made into a big-budget Hollywood film, starring the likes of Sean Connery, Michael Caine, and Saeed Jaffery. The book is the story of two soldiers that journey to a country on the edge of India, a country that was once rumored to contain great riches, that once belonged to Alexander the Great. Upon reaching the country, the two soldiers are captured by the local inhabitants, a people called Kafirs, named after their country, Kafiristan. When the two men are about to be killed, a necklace is discovered around the neck of one of the soldiers. Engraved on it is the symbol of the Masonic One Eye. The Kafirs revere him as their god and attribute to him the divine attribute of immortality. The man himself first regards himself as a king, and then in his newfound power begins to regard himself really as being a god. From the Muslim perspective, if not that of others, the similitudes that can be drawn from this story are very interesting. The Muslim scriptures, called Hadith, contain many prophecies of the Prophet Muhammad. In these, it is prophesied that a man would arise from amidst the Kafirs, which means infidels in Islam, who would be recognized by his one eye and would be made a world leader, claiming first to be a king and then later to being God, and that he will seem immortal until an appointed time. In another film, the concept of global leader and global government is also strongly propagated. In 1996, the film Independence Day broke all box office records, becoming the seventh highest ranking film of all time. It entranced audiences around the world with a fictional story of an alien invasion on Earth. However, deep within the film, subliminal messages can be found, indicating the Freemasonic presence and the Freemasonic agenda. In the film, there is a military base known as Area 51. It is from here that the military offensive is launched, on which the salvation of the whole world and the future of its inhabitants depends. The entrance to this installation is a pyramid, on which is engraved the symbol of the One Eye. The film shows the USA as the forerunner in establishing a global offensive, involving all the nations of the world, an offensive which is devised, controlled, and commanded by one man, one overall leader. The film is part of an upsurge in an upsurge of films and television serials on the topics of aliens, UFOs, and invasions threatening the whole of mankind. These are gradually fueling the growing interest and public unrest on the issue. This is just one of the many ways in which the Freemasons are paving the way for their global government. The Freemasons are using a number of approaches to drive fear into the hearts of the masses, instilling in them the need for greater protection, and thereby the need for greater security. A need that could only be fulfilled by a worldwide coalition government protecting the interests of all human beings across the globe.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Other tactics that the Masons are using in order to bring about a one-world government and the need for a global security force controlled by them is to allow crime rates to soar, thus creating fear for personal and national security. The drugs industry, according to official estimates, is in terms of monetary value one of the largest industries in the world. The countries of the world are currently involved in trying to solve this problem on a national and international scale. The United States, for example, has a huge and growing drugs problem, the direct result of which has been soaring crime rates, which continue to increase at an alarming rate. Backed by the growing levels of public demand for tougher action, the government has justification to use heavy-handed, overt and covert operations to combat the drugs problem and satisfy public opinion. However, certain disturbing facts about the American drugs war throw a shadow of doubt upon its credibility and the motives of the government. It is commonly believed that during the 1960s, J. Edgar Hoover, the then chairman of the FBI, allowed the drugs trade to flourish within the African-American community in an attempt to undermine the black community's uprising within American society. During the 1980s, with the threat of communism taking over Central America, money was urgently required to finance the rebellion movement against communism, and to raise this, the CIA allowed drugs to be traded into America. Revelations by the American senator, Jack Blum, who was part of an investigatory committee into the matter, confirms this. The pathetic justification given by the FBI for using drugs to subdue the African-American community in the 1960s was that the Black Uprising was in actual fact a communist attempt to undermine America's involvement in Vietnam. During the Contra Wars in the 1980s, the scapegoats used to justify the flow of drugs into America were once again the communists. However, today the threat of communism no longer exists. Yet the drugs trade is still flourishing in America, and the trade in international drugs trafficking is soaring, raising the question as to why.
In the course of the Contra War, the United States, as a matter of policy, abandoned drug law enforcement, looked the other way at the kinds of conditions we were creating that enhanced the ability of traffickers to move dope into the United States, and in effect allowed a drug trade to flourish, all to support the Contra movement and to support the war.
Historically, the Freemasons have used or created problems within society to turn and manipulate events in accordance with their agenda. The rising drugs problem in America gives the authorities all the justification needed to use stronger, heavy-handed tactics on an even wider scale. Already major transatlantic operations, as well as American and Latin American operations, have been undertaken to combat the drugs epidemic. It will not be long before there is significant backing for a strong global offensive. Distortion of the facts and usage of manufactured and biased statistics are the tools of the Freemasonic governments of today, as well as creating a public need for greater national and global security. Rising rates of crime, drug abuse, and the increasing threat of terrorism act to serve the purpose of promoting greater control of the masses. Advances in technology are the way forward for the Freemason. These allow the actions of all individuals in society to be monitored, checked, and recorded. Information is their key. The more information they have on individuals, the more accurately they can predict their actions. The Freemasons are creating a society. And in the society, choice is but an illusion. Technology is there to restrict the choices you have, and the choices you do have are in actual fact the products of a manipulated mind that has been steered into a predefined direction. Control of the masses means the complete control of every aspect of human life, your life. Shocking acts of terrorism, soaring crime rates, and increasing incidences of violence are propounded by film, media, and government reports alike, create strong public sympathy and support for harsh tactics and surveillance techniques. In this way, more and more technology can be introduced, and the level of monitoring and surveillance can be increased, until individuals are monitored to a level more befitting a totalitarian state. Public opinion would once again be manipulated to give the Masons justification for their actions and make their goals easier. The means of monitoring the masses and storing all personal information on individuals in society on a massive mega database are already underway. Rapid movements are taking place towards storing personal information on individuals on plastic, such as banking details, driving license information, and national insurance details. Currently, these details are stored on separate cards, but plans are well underway to merge all the information onto one identity card. The consequence would be complete monitoring of all purchases and transactions and personal details of an individual at the touch of a button. In 1992, the Vice Chancellor of the British Supreme Court, Nicholas Brown Wilkinson, told the High Court that if the information obtained by the police, the Inland Revenue, the social services, the health service and other agencies would be to be gathered together in one file, the freedom of the individual would be greatly at risk. However, the Freemasons, through the governments controlled by them, already have access to a vast array of information about you. They can already find out who you talk to on the phone, where you work, where you shop, what you eat, what you wear, how much you are worth, what you earn, and the list goes on and on. One identity card would allow even closer monitoring and enable a complete psychological profile to be compiled on every individual in society. Information which would make it very easy to predict, control, and manipulate actions. However, there is a gap that the Masons need to fill in. By using hard currency, an individual can evade detection and vital information is lost since hard currency transactions are untraceable. As a result, moves are being made to replace hard currency with a system that relies totally on electronic funds transfer. In other words, a system that relies totally on cards. Trails in Swindon have heralded the first signs of a move towards the introduction of smart cards and electronic money on a national scale in the UK. The Mondex scheme is pioneered by NatWest and Midland Banks and British Telecom, and is the first British trail of a smart card. Inside a smart card is a microchip which calculates every single transaction, not only financial transactions, but records every single thing for which it is used. It can serve as a credit card, a building society passbook, library card, travel card, phone card, and quite possibly an identity card. The concept was pioneered in France, which already has its own rigorous identity system. Although an identity card would reveal much detail, it would not be able to locate any one person precisely at any given instant time. This would require some sort of tracking device that could be put on and detected wherever that person may be on the globe. The tracking device would be an all-purpose microchipped identification device, or an electronic implant placed under the skin. These implants could then send off a signal which could then be picked up by satellite in low Earth orbit, locating and identifying the subject. Although this may sound like the works of fiction, it is, however, already well on its way to becoming reality. There are already approximately 48 global positioning satellites in orbit that are in use by the United States and her allies. These satellites can act upon incoming signals and pass down accurate information to the source of the signal about its location. At present, the source of the signals are devices that attach to tanks, battleships, aircraft, or handheld instruments for accurate navigation purposes. The next step would be to introduce the device that creates the source signal on every individual. Currently, one form of device that has been created specifically as a signal source for the satellites is the electronic tag. Already a scheme using such tags on individuals is in operation in the UK. The justification used is that it is necessary to curb the growth in the population of the already overflowing prisons. The tag fits securely around the offender's wrists and can be monitored to see if the offenders are violating curfew regulations. Pilot tagging schemes are already in operation in Greater Manchester, Berkshire and Norfolk, with plans for expansion in other countries in the coming year. In an article of the Daily Telegraph dated the 13th of November 1997, Jack Straw, the current British Home Secretary, stated that electronic tagging has developed rapidly in the past few years, as has people's confidence in it. There is no argument that it has within it the scope for further significant development. And with the people firmly under their watchful eye, the Masons can now further advance their plans for global control, manipulating them in accordance with their own ends, and this manipulation would be achieved by any means necessary. The Freemasons' plan for complete global control by one governmental body means that they must pave the way for complete global economic union, complete global legislatory and political union, and complete global military union. On March 25, 1957, with the creation of the European Economic Community, the first significant steps in the creation of this global government were taken. Since then, the EEC has become a testing ground for the New World Order. With the basic tenets of freedom of movement between member states already established, goods and people can move relatively freely within this one superstate. The plans are already underway for the establishment of complete monetary union, and the powers of the governmental body of Europe are growing every day, paving the way for complete political and legislatory union. All this will mean that eventually, in the superstate of the European Economic Community, there will be one currency, one economy, and one government. And the government would most certainly be a Masonic government. The three most important players of the European community are Britain, France, and Germany. Britain and France have long been Masonically controlled nations. During World War II, Germany was completely annexed by Britain and France, along with the United States, another Masonic nation, and the Soviet Union. The sectors of Germany controlled by the former three countries, the Masonic nations, formed a separate political identity called West Germany. And with the downfall of the Berlin Wall, West Germany has now taken over the former East Germany. Europe is not alone in its efforts to achieve superstate status. America and Mexico are currently the only two members of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. However, the nations of the South are increasingly being pursued to join. With Masonic superstates in both Europe and America firmly established, global union would be a logical and easy progression. However, there is another problem that the Masons need to contend with if they are to be the masters of this global union. By the 1970s, it was becoming increasingly clear that the population of Europe and white America was rapidly declining. Unless something was done, the expanding size of the population of third world nations would pose a serious threat to national security of Masonically controlled countries. Western consumer power and productivity would reduce, and as a result, they would be completely dependent on that of the third world population. Somehow, the gap between Western population and third world population had to be a bridge to restore Western supremacy, or more precisely, Masonic supremacy, at a global scale. In the 1970s, President Jimmy Carter commissioned the Global 2000 Report. The findings of the report blamed virtually all of the world problems on the population growth of non-white people. The report went on as far as recommending the elimination of at least 2 billion people in third world nations off the face of the earth by the year 2000 in order to restore Western supremacy. Interestingly enough, also in the 70s, the AIDS epidemic broke out, claiming huge amounts of life in third world nations, as well as amongst the growing black and Hispanic population of America. It was said that the virus originated from green monkeys in Africa and was later passed on to the local population through either acts of bestiality or through consuming them as food. From there on, AIDS spread like wildfire across the African continent and later on to the rest of the world, claiming millions of lives. However, the story was just a smokescreen. On June 2, 1988, the Los Angeles Times published an article refuting the idea that the human AIDS virus originated from green monkeys. It uncovered evidence that the DNA composition of AIDS was totally inconsistent with that of green monkeys. In fact, it could be proven that the AIDS virus could not be found anywhere in nature and could only have ever survived in the human biological system. On July 4, 1984, the New Delhi newspaper in India called The Patriot published an article making the first detailed charges of AIDS as being a counter-biological warfare agent. An anonymous American anthropologist was quoted, claiming that AIDS was genetically engineered at the U.S. Army's Biological Warfare Laboratory at Fort Detrick near Frederick, Maryland. Then on October 30th, 1985, the Soviet journal Literaturnaya Gazeta repeated the charges made by the Indian newspaper, making it an international controversy. All this, however, was easily passed off as a communist rhetoric by the Masonic West. However, on October 26, 1986, the Sunday Express became the first Western newspaper to run a front-page story confirming the findings of the Indian and Soviet newspapers entitled AIDS Made in Lab Shock. In this article, a distinguished physician, Dr. John Seale, and Professor Jacob Siegel, the retired director of the Institute of Biology at Berlin University, both concluded that the AIDS virus was man-made. The outbreak of AIDS has been linked to vaccine programs around the world. The internationally respected London Times newspaper published an article at the front page story on May 11, 1987, entitled Smallpox Vaccine Triggered AIDS. The article establishes a direct correlation between the smallpox vaccine administered by the World Health Organization to an estimated 50 to 70 million people in different Central African countries and the subsequent outbreaks of AIDS in those regions. The World Health Organization is the medical wing of the United Nations. The evidence suggests that AIDS is a genetically engineered virus spread through vaccination programs in third world countries. Germ warfare against the innocent and the weak aims at eliminating an entire populace off the face of the earth. AIDS is nothing other than the modern day final solution. And all of this for the purpose of installing an economic policy that would give complete global domination to the Masonic West. However, for the Freemasons, economic domination on its own is not enough. In order to have Masonic governments at the head of global union, under complete Masonic control, an economic union may suffice, but to keep it there, they would need a military union, and that union would be none other than the UN. The United Nations is a general assembly of the majority of the nations of the world. Britain, France, and America are already ranked within the five major powers of its Security Council, with the others being Russia and China. This means they have enough power to veto any motions passed. In December 1992, the President of the General Assembly declared that the UN must become a functional world parliament and went on to say that the UN should be equipped with its own intelligence service. However, the UN has already attained military power. It operates its own army, an army that stood back while thousands of Muslims were killed by the Serbs in Bosnia, and instead implement an arms embargo that left the Muslims without any means of self-defense. When UN soldiers were sent to wage war against General Mohammed Farah Aidid during the months between June and October 1993, American helicopters fired on hospitals, houses, and civilian crowds, killing hundreds of unarmed people. After an attack in which 71 died, the head of the UN mission, Admiral Jonathan Howe, said, "We knew what we were hitting. It was well planned." This was a clear breach of the Geneva Convention, but when the US military attorney was confronted on these points, his reply was that the Geneva Convention did not apply to the UN forces on the technicality that the UN is not the signatory to the convention. In other words, UN troops were free to commit any war crimes or atrocities they wanted and were above any law. In fact, the UN, far from bringing peace with it as it claims, instead has spread corruption in the land, leaving a trail of death and destruction wherever it has gone. Days of the Cold War, the very existence of the Soviet Union, meant that the Freemasons' path to a global government would take time. Now that communism has been destroyed, it seems that the Freemasons can at last use the UN to achieve their goals of a global government, therefore having the entire world at their grasp with none to stand in their way, or so they thought. For as the earth cries out because of the corruption and injustice they have spread over the land, through the agonizing centuries of their domination, the world is witnessing the reawakening of an old warrior. Now, the Freemasons have another enemy to contend with, an enemy which they have thought that they have destroyed. An enemy that will never bow down to the evil and demonic plan of the Freemasons. That enemy is Islam, and against it, they have declared war. However, the Muslims have already been forewarned about an enemy that will face them, the last prophet of God. Muhammad said that a man will appear after the Muslims have conquered a Roman city called Constantinople. He will first appear as a tyrannical king, then he will be claimed to be a prophet, and finally, he will claim to be the Lord God himself. Already the first part of the prophecy has been fulfilled. Constantinople was conquered and renamed Istanbul. The prophet further foretold that this liar would start to conquer the world, country by country, fortress by fortress, region by region, town by town, and no place will remain unscathed except the two holy cities of Mecca and Medina. He will possess powers to issue a command to the sky, and it will rain, and to the earth, and it will produce crops. He will call to a false religion and bring something which resembles paradise and hell. But that which resembles paradise will in fact be hell, and that which resembles hell will in fact be paradise. He is the Dajjal, meaning imposter, and he will be born with one eye, and your Lord is not one eye. It is also known that before the appearance of the Dajjal, a group of people will pave the way, setting up a system to prepare the world for his arrival. In other words, these forerunner to the Dajjal and their system will bear all the characteristics of the Dajjal, and he will be the final embodiment of these in human form. The forerunners to the Dajjal are none other than the Freemasons. The one eye is one of the ways to recognize the Dajjal. The one eye is the symbol of the Freemasons. It is part of their beliefs and is taken from ancient Egyptian mythology. In their ideology, it represents the supreme being, sometimes referred to as the great architect of the universe. The scholars of Islam say that the similitude of the Dajjal is that of the Pharaoh who tarried with the prophet Moses. The Pharaoh was a tyrannical leader who elevated himself in status and declared himself to be God. He used magicians to create illusions and fool the people and oppressed all who did not conform to his false religion. Today, the Freemasons weave another kind of magic. The illusions they create take the form of hidden or openly propagated messages in films, televisions, cartoons, music, and all the other cogs in their well-oiled media machine. And this same media machine has continuously been put into action to slander and destroy the character of Islam, following another trait of the Dajjal, who goes further and slanders God directly. The Dajjal is an oppressor to all who do not follow him. He will have powers to increase the land harvest or destroy it, depending whether the people follow him. Similarly, the Freemasonic West, through the World Bank, hold the Third World nations to ransom if they do not act in accordance with their wishes. Abundance of IMF development loans are often used to ensnare such nations, and the unattainable interest payments keep them ensnared. They are forced to submit or face economic collapse and dire poverty. Another way in which the Dajjal will control the people, either deluding them or forcing them to submit, is by spreading disease. He will have the ability to spread disease or cure it, effectively playing God. And with this power, he will delude many to his false religion. The Freemasons also play with people's lives in this manner. Evidence exists showing that many viruses have created or mutated in military labs and later used in experiments on human beings. And it has been established that AIDS is a man-made tool used to suit the purposes of Masonic West. The Dajjal shall try to strip God of all of his divine attributes and claim them for himself. This arrogance is also the way of the Freemasons, who are engaged in replacing the laws of God with those that are man-made and claiming justice across the land, trying to see and hear everything, using genetics to alter and to improve the creation to reach their false standards. Their arrogance knows no bounds, and they obey no law but that of their own making. These are the forerunners to the Dajjal. These are the Freemasons. Prophet Muhammad said that a time would come when the whole world would gather around to plan the destruction of the Muslims, as if they were gathered around a table to take part in a meal. Today the nations of the world are doing just that, around the circular tables of the United Nations General Assembly Hall. He also said that the time of the Dajjal will be years of confusion. People will believe a liar and disbelieve one who is trustworthy, and those who rebel against God will have a say in general affairs. Today, during the time preceding the Dajjal, there is also a time of confusion. The system set up by the forerunners to the Dajjal have ensnared many Muslims away from truth. Using lures such as wealth and materialism and fulfillment of earthly desires. A miserable trade indeed. These times of tribulation are like a giant sieve, sorting out the true believers from the apostates and hypocrites. Many have adopted the lifestyle and philosophy of the Dajjal system, retaining perhaps only their Muslim names or clothing, wearing them like a badge to their identity, and in every other way embracing wholeheartedly the system that is being used to eradicate Islam. Embracing the same system that stood back and did nothing when pregnant Muslim women had their bellies ripped open by Serbs, killing them and the contents of their wombs. The same system that stands still whilst women and small girls are being raped in Kashmir. A system that stood still whilst mothers saw their children dragged away by soldiers during the night, never to return, simply because they spoke out against being refugees in their own homeland. And the same system that said nothing to the tyrant that gassed women and children simply because he danced the Masonic tune. For those who choose this system, claim to love Allah and his messenger, but hate what he has brought, leave the guidance that is Islam, and they adhere to the evil system of the Dajjal, living their lives in accordance with its rules, and seeking from it worldly rewards, disregarding the truth that is the laws of Allah. They are those who invite upon themselves the wrath of Allah. The forerunners to the Dajjal have set up this system to destroy Islam, either directly, through military and economic coercion, or indirectly, using ideological warfare. They have divided and conquered, instilling diseases such as nationalism and racism into the heart of the Ummah. Their biggest fear is Muslim unity and revival of the message brought by the last prophet to mankind. And everything they do is geared to prevent this. They have manipulated Muslims, setting up and promoting divides. They have installed their own universal language, compelling all to learn or be shut out. And what they have used most to keep the Muslims at bay is oil. During World War I, the Freemasonic governments managed to destroy the Islamic Caliphate and annex all its territories. The part now called Iraq was put to British mandate. After its independence, the USA took over interest in Iraq. In fear of a purist Islamic uprising, the CIA aided the Ba'ath Party's rise to power, making Saddam Hussein the leader of Iraq and an ally to the Masonic states. When Kuwait later started raising its oil prices, it was destroying the war-torn economy of Iraq. Threats were made but ignored. The situation worsened until finally Iraqi troops were mobilized to the border. The Freemasonic media, the American media in particular, portrayed this as a shock and outrage. However, it is reported that the US ambassador to Kuwait had prior knowledge of the invasion and Iraq's intentions, as did the CIA. After the Gulf War, Saddam is still alive, and Kuwait has been liberated, it remains to be asked exactly what purpose the Gulf War served to its Freemasonic orchestrators. The Masonic West has long realized that the control of oil is vital to their economies. One of the main reasons is their reliance on cars and road transport. However, although technology exists to mass produce fully operational electric cars, all attempts to do so have been vetoed. This is because oil is crucial to maintaining their world order. And without the puppet governments and leaders, such as Saddam Hussein, the Freemasonic West could not control the Muslim nations. Without the division of wealth and false leadership of these nations, nothing would prevent the purist Islamic movements from coming to power. Poverty creates unity, and Muslim unity is the greatest fear of the forerunners to the Dajjal. The Gulf Wars serve many purposes: to promote Western unity, to create divides amongst the Muslim nations, to act as a testing ground for an entire arsenal of military weapons and cocktails of chemicals and drugs, but most of all, it served to ensure a strong military presence in the Middle East. The Dajjal has placed a strong hold in the very heart of Islam itself and laid a firm grip on the Muslim holy lands. But although they plan, Allah also plans, and Allah is the best of planners. The final victory will be with the Muslims.